Hello and welcome back to the Cool Your Jets podcast. I am Michael Nania. It is March 22nd, 2026, 3:02 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as I record this, which means the New York Jets are well past the opening wave of free agency. The NFL draft is 32 days away. There is an eventful week of pro days coming up for the Jets, four different pro days that Aaron Glenn and Darren Mooji will be attending. So we're in that transition period between free agency and the draft. So in the spirit of that, I figured why not take stock of the Jets roster, see how it looks after the free agency wave here to get an idea of how their needs and their strengths and weaknesses have changed now that we're preparing for the draft. So without further ado, let's get right into it. I did an article on this at Jets X Factor earlier today, and we'll kind of go along the same lines here. And basically, let's rank the positions on this roster from worst to best. And as we go through it, we'll kind of take stock of each position, what the depth chart looks like, some of the needs, how it can be addressed going forward, either still through free agency, the draft, or the trade market. And just also how the Jets' plans of attacking these positions in the draft may have changed or not changed because of the free agency move. So let's get into it. Number 10, this one for me was a total no-brainer, and that would be quarterback. Geno Smith, Brady Cook, Bailey Zappe, that's your depth chart right now. Look, it doesn't have a ceiling in terms of short-term upside, doesn't have a ceiling in terms of long-term upside, and it doesn't have depth. And I think those are the three factors that you talk about when it comes to evaluating a position group, at least in this ranking that we're doing here. I think you look at, you know, how likely or what is the ceiling for this unit in the short term, meaning this upcoming season? Does it have long-term potential in terms of young players who could be a solution for 3, 4, 5 years? And do you have depth? You know, guys who you could trust in case of the starters getting injured, or in the cases of some of these position groups where you rotate players during a game, do you trust those rotation players to come in and be productive? So I think those are some of the factors we'll be going on here. And quarterback doesn't check any of those boxes. Geno Smith is coming off of an atrocious season in which he was basically the worst non-rookie starting quarterback in the league. And obviously, you know, not a good supporting cast in Vegas at all. Coaching, offensive line, receivers, not a lot going his way. But let's not act like he's coming to an amazing situation with the Jets. I think there are some areas where you expect things to be better. Garrett Wilson is here. The offensive line is clearly better. But the coaching could be every bit as dysfunctional as it was in Las Vegas. And the receiver group, look, if we'll see what the Jets do in the draft and moving forward. But as of today, they are one Garrett Wilson injury away from being even worse than the Raiders pass-catching group last year, considering they did have Brock Bowers, and Geno was no better when Bowers was out there. So, you know, look, I think there's some optimism that, you know, maybe Reich's scheme could be ideal for Geno. That is something that I did an article on this. Check that out because it's a lot easier to understand some of this stuff when there's a visual in front of you. But basically, I do think there is a good scheme fit here that could help Geno Smith bounce back a little bit. Frank Reich, during his last three seasons as a coach in the NFL, 2021 through 23, the two most common route types that were targeted in his offense relative to league average were the dig route and the drag route. And Geno Smith, during his 3-year run as the Seahawks starting quarterback, his two best routes in terms of EPA per pass attempt compared to the league average were the dig route and the drag route. So there is very good congruency there in terms of Geno excelling at the routes that Frank Reich builds his offense around. And on the other end of the spectrum, Geno's worst route in terms of EPA per attempt relative to league average was the post route. That also happens to be Reich's least favorite route to call relative to the league average, at least over his most recent three seasons as an NFL coach. So That to me is the most optimistic kind of green flag that I've seen regarding Geno's odds of bouncing back with the Jets this year. Because look, there is, you do have a semblance of short-term upside here in the sense that Geno is two seasons removed from a three-season run in which he was an above-average starting quarterback, or maybe you could say average at the minimum. Just a very solid quarterback. He had a over 500 record each season. And, you know, obviously we don't care about win-loss as a quarterback stat, but I think the Seahawks record while he was the quarterback was directly reflective of the type of play he was giving them, because he was average-ish, probably a little bit above, and that's about how the team played. So he is a guy who very recently has shown you can be a quarterback who leads your team to borderline wildcard contention. I think that as a short-term ceiling is exciting for the Jets, given how low the bar has gotten. But it's just the chances of hitting that give me pause with Geno. And obviously, we're looking at all this in a short-term lens. I know a lot of people are focused on 2027 and beyond. They don't care what Geno does this year, but I'm just talking about Geno, what he's going to produce this year, and the Jets' hopes of winning games in 2026. And I'm just concerned about his chances of having that type of bounce back to a Seahawks-type level because, look, he is 35 years old, and if you watched him last season, both through the eye test and some of the numbers, he just looked like he may have hit the wall as an athlete, just was taking a lot of sacks, could not evade pressure in the way that he was the previous few seasons. He was not scrambling the way he was the previous few seasons. So anyway, quarterback lowest on the list here. Jets, I think, very clearly still need to throw another veteran into this group, not just as a backup, but I think to compete with Geno. I really don't buy into the idea that he's the obvious starter for this season. I mean, the way he played last year, it just doesn't make sense to hand him the job, in my opinion. And it wouldn't be in the spirit of competition that Aaron Glenn has often preached as a Jets head coach. And look, they already screwed this up last season by letting Justin Fields be the obvious no competition starter throughout camp, when I think we all clearly saw that Tyrod Taylor would have won that. And look, obviously Fields had the higher ceiling, so it made sense. Build offense around him, give him a chance to succeed. I get that. But given that it didn't work out, I do think going back to the competition route with a quarterback like Geno Smith, who did not play well enough last year to be guaranteed a starting spot this year, I think it makes sense. So getting another veteran in there for the purpose of that, the purpose of depth, is critical. But let's see what they do in the draft. Will they take that Ty Simpson swing? Do it as early as 16, trade back to the first, early second? You know, will he be there at 33? I'm absolutely keeping an eye on that. Because look, the Jets don't have any potential in their quarterback room. And that's the issue. Because last year with Justin Fields, you did have an over 0% chance of having your franchise quarterback on the roster. You could say it's one in a billion, but it was over zero. Right now, it's zero. Geno Smith, Brady Cook, Bailey Zappi, no franchise quarterback on this roster. It is guaranteed to not be the case. So you throw a guy like Ty Simpson in there, now there's a chance. Not a high chance, given that he's not a premier quarterback prospect, but it's a chance. And this is a position that's too important to take lightly from a long-term potential type of perspective. You know, you could go a few seasons without a star safety or a star guard and then, you know, take your stab when it comes along. But you need a big-time quarterback, or at least an above-average one. You know, Sam Darnold has changed that perspective to where, you know, you don't necessarily need a superstar, but you do need someone who's comfortably above average, and the Jets don't have anyone on their roster who can be trusted to do that for years to come. So are they going to go a whole season without at least having that chance? That's what we'll find out on draft weekend. I do think they'll take one at some point, but I'm very curious to see if they take an early step to give themselves, you know, somewhat of a legitimate chance that maybe it breaks their way. And they don't have to do this 2027 quarterback pursuit. So we'll see how that all pans out. Let's move on the list here to number 9. I have edge defender at number 9. Joseph Asai, Will McDonald, Kingsley Enagbare, Braden McGregor, Tyler Barron, Eric Watts, and then some random people who nobody cares about. The depth is looking better after free agency, getting Osai in there, getting Enagbare in there, and getting Michael Clemens the hell out of here. So just because of that, honestly, it's the most improved position on the roster, just getting Clemens out. It's the biggest addition by subtraction in the National Football League. So you like the depth here. I think you're now three deep with, you know, NFL caliber guys who you throw them out there and you're like, okay, that's an NFL player. Because I think a lot of times last year you didn't have that with your Braden McGregors and Michael Clemens and whatever other random players were playing snaps at the end of last year. And, you know, Osai is, I think, an average starter. Enagbare is like a high-end backup edge. So, you know, neither of these guys are going to move the needle too much. But, you know, if these are the guys you're turning to on in a situation where, you know, hopefully, presumably, the number two pick is going to be an edge rusher, you would love to see Will McDonald take a leap. So if those are your top two guys, and then Osai and Enagbare are rounding out your rotation, you feel really good about those being your back end guys. But as of today, it's number nine because the Jets don't have a superstar here. Will McDonald has the potential to be that, but did not have the production you want to see this past season. His run defense is still a weakness. So we've talked a lot about McDonald on this podcast, but we'll see how his role shakes out on this defense. Situational pass rusher. Will he get traded entirely? A wide spectrum of possibilities for McDonald moving forward here. So I have Edge at number nine. I still think that will be the pick of number two. I think it'll be Arvell Reese in all likelihood as we get closer and closer to the draft. David Bailey still in that conversation. I think Caleb Downs has been removed with the safety moves. I wouldn't totally rule out Carnell Tate, although I'd be pretty shocked at this point because it seems like Tate is starting to mix in with some of those other first-round receivers, more so than being the clear-cut number one. So I think it's between Reese and Bailey. It's like 90% Reese, maybe 10% Bailey. But the Jets are going to see both of these guys at their pro days this week. Ohio State on Monday or Tuesday? Tuesday for Ohio State. And then Texas Tech on Thursday. So moving on. Actually, let me correct that. Wednesday is the Ohio State pro day. Thursday, they'll be at Texas Tech to see David Bailey. So moving on. Number eight, I have cornerback. Brandon Stevens, Azarrié Thomas, Jarvis Brownlee, Nashon Wright, Quantez Stiggers, Samuel Womack III is your cornerback depth chart right now. I think you're in for some good competition here. That's what the Jets built with free agency by throwing Wright into the mix. I would have a three-way conversation or competition for two spots on the outside with Stevens, Thomas, and Wright, but I would like to think Stevens is comfortable in that spot given the investment they made last year. And, you know, he was pretty consistent this year. The issue with Stevens was that his lows were low and pretty frequent, and there just weren't really any highs. You know, he had no interceptions, didn't really have any great games, especially against top-level receivers, but he gave up a lot of touchdowns, 8 touchdowns to 0 interceptions, and that's just not good at all. But generally speaking, he did tackle pretty well, support the run, and his yardage allowed was way down compared to the previous season. So given those factors, I think he's probably safe. But then you have Thomas against Wright competing for a starting spot, and Thomas has a lot of potential. He's a good fit for this defense, lengthy physical corner, showed great potential against the Bengals, filling in for Sauce Gardner that game. And during his short run as a starter, there were ups and downs, but the ceiling was obvious. So I'm very excited to see what he could do in the summer. Then in the slot, you have Jarvis Brownlee, who, similar to Thomas, I think there's a ceiling there, but there were some bumps of a young player. He is an aggressive box-filling player, but did commit some penalties and give up quite a bit in coverage. Perhaps Quantez Stiggers will push him. So I have corner number eight here. You know, it's a decent depth chart. You got some good competitions shaping up, but the Jets just don't have a star here at this point. I mean, Brandon Stevens as your projected CB1 is definitely on the lower end in the league, I would say. So that's the question for this unit. Can Azaire Thomas break out and be the star cornerback one that the Jets obviously have not had since trading Sauce midway through last season? Moving on to number seven, I got tight end, and maybe this is a little low, but for me, I'm a big fan of Mason Taylor. Showed a lot of potential in his rookie season. His blocking improved as the season went along, but not a lot of production there yet. And obviously, you know, quarterback situation didn't help and all of that. But we got to see it first before we can definitively say he's a high-quality starter. So you could say he's about average. And then after that, you just don't have too much. Jeremy Ruckert, I'm still not very high on him. I think he improved as a blocker this year, but that's coming from such a low place that him being an average blocker was a big improvement. And he doesn't do too much in the passing game. So tight end, I got at number seven here. And, you know, this is a good place to throw this conversation in there. And Ian Roddy at JetX did a fantastic article on this. But it's worth thinking about what the Jets will do at number 16 if wide receiver is not the selection. And there's a number of reasons that could happen. Maybe none of these first-round guys, Tyson, Tate, Lemon, Boston, maybe none of them are available at that pick. Maybe the Jets just don't like whoever is available. Whatever the case, it is worth entertaining the idea that wide receiver is not the pick there. As much as it seems like almost a must at this point, because the Jets have not done anything at wide receiver, let alone get a player with a high ceiling. They haven't added any depth or veteran players to solidify the unit at all. So it almost feels like a necessity to take a receiver there. But we all know the draft doesn't go that way all of the time. So if the Jets don't take a wide receiver, could they take a pass catcher at another position? Kenyon Sadiq from Oregon. That's a possibility worth considering, because I don't think you can look at this tight end unit and think that it's an off-the-table position at number 16. And look, I'm a big positional value guy. I've been strongly against Caleb Downs at two. And then last year, or 2 years ago, when we were having the Brock Bowers conversation, last year it was Tyler Warren. 2 years ago, it was Brock Bowers. So 2 years in a row, we had this talk. And it was, you know, tight end versus offensive tackle. And I was pro tackle in both of those scenarios, and the Jets took the tackle both times, and I think they feel pretty good about that now. And, you know, so I'm definitely cognizant and wary of the positional value conversation with tight end, but this is the 16th pick, so it's a fair spot for a tight end. We're not talking seventh overall like Tyler Warren last year. There's a big difference there in terms of salary scale and the value that you're expected to get out of those picks. So a 16 is fair for me for a high-end tight end. And then going back to the depth chart that the Jets have here, I don't think this position is strong enough to take that off the table when we're talking about the 16th pick. Seventh pick, you know, top five, something crazy like that, sure. Mason Taylor, Ruckert will roll with it. But 16th pick, a guy like Kenyon Sadiq with that type of potential, you know, we're talking historic athletic abilities with him, and I'm going to pull up some of the numbers here for you. But at the combine, 6'3", 241, 439 in the 40, 43.5-inch vertical, 133-inch broad jump. All three of those numbers, at least 98th percentile for tight ends all time. So this guy is an insane specimen at the position. And you know, is Jeremy Ruckert really going to stop me from drafting him? And I'm not saying Mason Taylor would stop me from draft, or that Mason Taylor isn't good enough to, you know, be the starter. But, you know, this is a league where we see 12 personnel quite a bit. And granted, it's not something that Frank Reich likes doing. But if I'm Darren Mougi, I can't let a 60, how old is Frank Reich? 60-something-year-old offensive coordinator, 64, dictate a pick that's for the next 5 years. So look, multi-tight end sets are becoming more common in the league today as offenses try to counter the way the defenses have gotten smaller and quicker. So what's wrong with having Mason Taylor and Kenyon Sadiq as opposed to Jeremy Ruckert being your second tight end, whose only touchdown in four seasons was in garbage time against a terrible Cowboys defense? I would sign up for that. So in a perfect world, I would love to see the Jets get a receiver there. Hopefully someone like Mekhi Lemon. But if not, I don't think tight end should be ruled out at that spot. With Kenyon Sadiq, obviously, being the only player who would justify that. Okay, so tight end number seven. Number six is where I have wide receiver. And maybe this is a little high. I definitely understand if you would place it lower. But to me, Garrett Wilson alone is enough to put it over any of those positions I had below, because they just don't have anyone close to Garrett Wilson's caliber at those positions. But let's not ignore the reality that past Garrett Wilson, if we're ranking all the wide receiver depth charts in the league, excluding the wide receiver one, this is probably the worst. I mean, I would say that very comfortably right now. The number three receiver right now is Isaiah Williams, a punt return specialist who was cut last season. So it's not good. And you have the potential of Arian Smith, but you know, he kind of struggled to get playing time and targets last year. A.D. Mitchell still has plenty of potential. Second round talent, I think, separated really well last year, but obviously the quarterbacking wasn't there. However, he did really struggle to catch the ball when it did come to him. So he did have plenty of drops and poor contested catch rate. So Jets need help here, which we talked about. So moving on, I think that bottom five there is pretty solidified to me. And so I think there's a firm line between the five positions we just discussed and the top five positions here. I would not argue with you if you resorted the five we just did, the five we just went over in any way. And I also would not argue with you if you sorted this top five that we're about to get into in any particular way. So big gap here between number six and number five, which is where I have the linebacker position. Jamie Sherwood, Demario Davis, Kiko Maui-Noah, Michael Walker, Marcelino McCrary-Ball, and Kobe King. Look, I think this could be number one at the end of the season. Demario Davis has not been below a top end, like a top 10 linebacker since 2016. So I know he's 37, but until he's not an absolute monster, I'm going to count on him to be that. And next to him, you have Jamien Sherwood, who only 2 years ago was a top 10 to 15 type of linebacker and is young enough and raw enough at the position. Remember, a college safety, raw enough at the position to potentially continue improving upon that. So the ceiling is really high. This duo could be the best duo of any pair of teammates on the Jets roster, and it could be one of the best linebacker duos in football. The question is that Jamien Sherwood was not good last year. He was exposed in coverage constantly. He was benched. His effort was questionable. So we just don't know what Jamien Sherwood we're going to get. So I'm going to leave that at number five. But behind that, you know, Michael Walker quietly was a really good linebacker three down the stretch of the season. One of the few Jets defensive players who had a positive impact during those last few games. But yeah, he was tackling really well, making some plays. So I think he has a chance to get that linebacker three spot and perform really well in that role. But Kiko Maui-Noah is also there, obviously a very athletic rookie drafted last year who got some playing time but didn't get, before injuries came in, didn't get enough playing time to really develop. So I got linebacker at number five. At number four, we have running back Breece Hall, Braylon Allen, Isaiah Davis, Kine Nwangwu. Same unit as last year. Nothing has changed about this group right now. And Breece Hall just is he's the wild card, as he has been the past few seasons. He's a player who has shown a wide range of possibilities in the league. As we all know, his first seven games in the NFL, he seemed like he was going to be the best player in the league. Suffers an injury. 2023 was up and down. 2024 was a pretty disappointing season for him. I would say he was like a league average running back that year. But then he comes back this year, and I think he was pretty clearly a top 10 type of running back. Whatever metric you want to look at, yards after contact, broken tackles, missed tackles forced, or rushing yards over expected, all that stuff. Clearly a top 10 type of player in terms of just making plays for a Jets offense that really struggled to do so outside of him and forced opposing defenses to focus solely on him. So given the context and his production relative to expectations, I think he was one of the most impactful running backs last year, but we still got to see what version of him is going to show up this year. So still a high quality starter, high ceiling, has a track record of production, and yeah, has so much potential to be more productive given that he hasn't played in great environments in his career. So high quality starter at the top. The depth is interesting with this unit. You know, Allen and Davis have, I think, are solid in their roles. Allen has been a good short yardage back when given chances. Although last time we saw him at the goal line in Miami, did not come through there. And Isaiah Davis has been, you know, efficient in small spurts, but it's often in garbage time or on third and long. So you don't really know what his ceiling is. So it's fine, the depth between these two guys. I don't think it's a necessity, but I would like to see some competition in here, see if the Jets can get a little more oomph out of the back end of this running back depth chart. Moving to number three, defensive tackle. Probably the deepest position on the roster. Tavondre Sweat, Juwan Briggs, David Onyemata, Harrison Phillips, Peyton Page, Mozzie Smith, Jack Heflin is your depth chart right now. The top four here is probably one of the best top fours in the league. Or at least, let's put it this way. The Jets' fourth best defensive tackle might be the best fourth best defensive tackle in the league. Or near the top. Whoever you want to say that is out of these four. So going four deep, they're really solid here with, you know, especially run defense between these four players. But Juwan Briggs and David Onyemata give you some pass rush, especially Briggs. He has a very high ceiling in that phase. So great depth with this defensive tackle unit for the Jets. Give Darren Mugi some credit. Three trades and then the signing of Onyemata to build this unit out. All of that since last August. So that's with no drafts and not even being in the beginning of the free agency period. So, or at least one free agency period because we have this one. So deep unit. The concern here is that you don't have a superstar right now. And I feel like D tackle out of all the positions probably has one of the highest quantity of stars. Like there's a lot of great defensive tackles. So it's the type of thing to where if you're one of the teams that doesn't have one of those defensive tackles, it stands out a lot more than other positions. Like there are a few positions where I think having a superstar is so rare that it's not a big issue if you don't have one. Like I think safety is kind of an example of that. Maybe corner, because it's so rare to have those top end players that, you know, most teams accept that they don't have it. And the goal is just to have a well-rounded deep unit. But at D tackle, if you don't have that superstar, you're almost in the minority. So it is an issue that I think holds it back from being in my top two here. But the depth is great. And the Jets are going to be able to rotate guys and never feel like they have to have a liability on the field. And that was a big problem in the last few seasons. You know, J2Fele, Leaky Fotu, guys like this are playing major reps for you. And that hurts. But now, you know, the Jets will start whoever they start out of these four. And then you rotate in Onyemata, Sweat, Briggs, Phillips. And as long as you have two of these four guys on the field, you're like, that's a good solid duo. Run or pass, really. Other than, you know, Phillips doesn't really give you much pass rush at this point. But Tavondre Sweat can get the quarterback. For a 366-pounder who's obviously out there to stop the run, he is a good pass rusher relative to that. So really any two out of these four, you feel good. So it's in a good spot, but we'll see if they can get that superstar. Quinnen Williams, even if not Quinnen Williams type player, because I think he's the best in the league right now, or at least top two, you know, Jeffrey Simmons and Chris Jones. So let's say top three comfortably. So they don't have to get that type of level, but let's see if they could get either someone emerges this year or within the next few years, see if they can get a top tier defensive tackle. On the current roster, the only guy with that type of potential is Briggs. And I think he could do it. If you look at his pass rush production the second half of last season, after he took over for Quinnen, you know, he's right up there with Chris Jones, Jeffrey Simmons in pressure rate, total pressures, pass rush win rate, all that stuff. And this is a guy who was brought in for run defense. That's why he was drafted, why the Jets traded for him, is solely stopping the run. And then he added that pass rush potential in there. So he does have the type of upside. We'll see if he can get there, given that, you know, he's a seventh round pick. He got this production in a garbage time portion of the Jets season where there were a lot of snaps up for grabs. And, you know, it wasn't the most sustainable brand of football that the Jets were playing. So there is that question. But look, he was great. So we'll see if he can sustain that. But the Jets would be happy if he's just a solid starter for them. Moving on to number two. Almost a shock to see this year, given how bad it was going into the offseason, and really has been in each of the past few Jets seasons. But I have safety in that number two spot. Minkah Fitzpatrick, Dane Belton, Malachi Moore, Andre Sisco, Dean Clark, Jairus Monroe, Kedron Smith, and Chris Smith II. You got it all here. You got a star at the top in Minkah Fitzpatrick, all-pro pedigree, and he hasn't made that in a few years. Hasn't gotten interceptions over the past few years, but you look at his production last year in terms of his coverage, tackling, all that stuff. He was still playing like a star, and you do have the concern of him turning 30 this year. So when a lot of DBs hit that wall, more so corners, I think safeties can age a little better, but that's a fair concern. So we'll see if he can maintain the type of production he provided last year. But until that fall off happens, I trust him as a high-end safety. So you have that superstar at the top, who also, his versatility gives you the flexibility to play everyone else to their strengths. And then after that, there's a lot here. You have veteran depth in Andre Sisco, who, look, he wasn't good last year, but he's an NFL starter for five straight years, and he might be your fourth safety. So that's a great spot to be in. Malachi Moore, fourth-round rookie, really stood out, showed some upside with his physicality, intensity, nose for the ball in terms of making stops. Dane Belton is still only 25 years old. He's got plenty of starting experience with the Giants, high takeaway frequency while on the field. So there's a lot here. You got youth and upside. You got competitions. You got veteran depth. You got a star at the top. This unit's in a great spot. And check out this article as well at JetX that I wrote recently, but I went into the ideal plan at this position, how to line up these guys, who should start as the deep safety, as the box safety. But to summarize it for you quickly, Aaron Glenn's defense in Detroit, which it seems likely that the Jets defense will look a lot like that, even if not identical. But Aaron Glenn's defense in Detroit, the gist with the safeties was that he was less interchangeable with the usage than most NFL defenses. He was very strict to Kirby Joseph being your deep safety and Brian Branch being your box safety. And that's because he played so much cover one, more cover one than anyone else. And he played some cover three on top of that. So you're talking about a lot of single high coverages or middle closed coverages. And when you're doing that at a high rate, it means on a high percentage of your snaps, only one safety is going to be back, and one safety is going to be roaming, playing some sort of role closer to the line, whether that's linebacker, edge, slot, whatever. So given how frequently he played middle closed single high coverage, it gave him an opportunity to play the line safeties to their strengths. Kirby Joseph was the deep man. He's got the range. And Brian Branch is your Swiss Army knife physical enforcer in the box. So Glenn's scheme really allowed him to keep Joseph in the role that he plays best and keep Branch in the role that he plays best. And both of those guys were elite performers in that defense under him. So if the Jets operate the same way this year, which I expect them to, but obviously we can't say that with certainty until it happens. But assuming they do, I think Minka should be in that Kirby Joseph role. Because if you go back to when Fitzpatrick was putting up 5 interceptions a year, making all pro every single season, that's the role he was playing. He was playing over 3/4 of his snaps as a deep safety. And he was ranging all over the field, picking off passes, scoring touchdowns. And look, he wasn't a bad player the last 3 seasons, but his usage in that role went way down. And as a result, the interceptions went down. And again, he was still a good player. This past season for the Dolphins, he actually was playing more slot than he ever has before in his career. And he did a good job. His coverage numbers were good. He was especially stingy in man coverage, one of the best man coverage safeties in the league, and just one of the best slot coverage defenders in general. And, you know, it didn't translate to interceptions or anything, but he was really good. So it's not to say that if he's not at free safety, he won't be a good player. But if the Jets want to get that peak Minka Fitzpatrick impact, which I still think he's capable of providing at this stage of his career, you got to play him at free safety. Because, and the reason I feel comfortable he can do it again is if you look at his 2025 season, it only says 1 interception, but he also had a pick 2 on a 2-point conversion. He had 2 fumble recoveries. He had a forced fumble. So that's really 5 takeaways in total that he was in on. And there were plenty of plays where you could see the speed and range. So I think it makes a lot of sense to put Minka back at the deep safety role, because in this defense, he's going to get to stick there, play most of his reps there, and he'll have so many chances to cover sideline to sideline and make some interceptions for a defense that didn't have any last year. And then you get to have Belton compete against Moore for the box safety role, because both of those guys are great fits in that role. They're both good tacklers. Belton had the lowest missed tackle rate among any safety this past season. Moore was not quite that efficient, but he improved to an above average level after the first few games of the year. And he made a lot of tackles in general, so he was finding the football. So both of these guys are better known for their physicality and tackling in the box. And in this defense, there is a role for them to stick to that and not have to worry about covering sideline to sideline, which especially Malachi Moore, I don't think you want to see much of, given that he just doesn't have the raw speed that I think you look for in that role. So that's how I would distribute these safeties. Check out the article. There are a lot more specific numbers and everything if you want to know how that all quantifies and breaks down. But I like where this unit's at, and I'm hoping to see it used in the way I just described. Number 1, offensive line. It's in a good spot. You got a bookend tackles you feel good about, first-round talents who are young and have already been average to above average and should only keep trending up. You got an interior lineman in Tippmann, who was a high second-round pick and has also been a solid starter. You expect him to trend up. You got Dylan Parham at left guard, who I think could be a major steal and an upgrade over John Simpson, at least how Simpson played last year, because Simpson had a great first season with the Jets. Only weak link here is Josh Myers at center, who I hope the Jets still sign someone or use a second round, but at some point a draft pick to compete with Josh Myers. And then that strengthens the depth too, because the depth is a little questionable here, especially on the interior. And if you bump Myers down to a backup, suddenly in that role, he looks like an asset, because I think he's a high-end backup, but as a starter, he is a low-end guy. But still, 4 out of 5 spots in the starting unit, you feel really, really good. There's a lot of continuity here, so you expect that to help them be more predictable and safe in having a high floor as a unit. And it also gives them a springboard to build and become even better as a group next year. So I have offensive line number 1. I do think that, okay, what I'm debating in my mind in my moment of silence there is whether guard is off the table in the first round, specifically with Vega Ione. I do think that before free agency, it was very much in play, but now, you know, Parham's on, it's not the biggest commitment of all time, but 2 years, $16 million. So they like the player, clearly. They view him as a starter, a multi-year starter. So you know, guard at 16 is already on the borderline of whether that's a good value. I do think the odds went down quite a bit of that being the pick. But if that's your best player available by far, and, you know, you do have a hole on this interior, and Parham has played center in the past. It's not his best position or natural position. So you could consider a competition or, you know, pushing him over to center. I wouldn't completely rule it out, but I do think the odds are much lower that the Jets go interior O-line in the first round. But at some point, you would like to see them add to that group to push Josh Myers and strengthen this depth chart. But there we have it. Jets position groups ranked from worst to best. We were able to mix in some draft talk there about how free agency affected the Jets draft plans and, you know, some of the big debates that will transpire over the next month. Some outside the box options, whether it's Kenyon Sadiq at 16, Vega Ione. So Carnell Tate at 2, I threw out there. I don't think that's going to happen, but I don't know. Weird things happen in the draft. Trayvon Walker went number 2. That's pretty weird to me. So we'll see what happens. But there's my ranking of the Jets position groups. Hopefully that helps you get kind of a sense of where this team stands, what the greatest needs are, which needs aren't so pressing, and then also the trend of those needs. What's trending up after free agency, what's trending down, and so on and so forth. So thank you so much for listening. We'll be back at some point in the future. That's all I can ever really promise on this podcast, because I know it's like I'll do 3 in a row, then it's 2 weeks. That's just how it goes with the Cool Your Jets podcast. So, but I appreciate you so much for listening. It means a lot, because I know this podcast is very nerdy, and I could drone on doing this by myself now. But I love doing it and having a platform to kind of vocalize my thoughts, since I do so much writing. So it's nice to have this to speak about it and flesh it out, put my personality, my voice behind it. So if you're still listening here over 42 minutes in, as I have an excessively long outro, I appreciate you, is all I got to say. Talk to you next time.